You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Michael Tellinger. Michael has been one of South Africa's best-selling export authors. His regular articles on human origins and his book, Slave Species of God, have been praised by readers in over 20 countries. After a 30-year-long obsession with the origins of humankind and the genetic anomalies of our species, he took some time out to write Slave Species of God. When Johann Heine exposed the mystery of the stone ruins of South Africa to Michael in 2007, they began an irreversible process of research that led Michael to some startling scientific conclusions and the completion of two more books, Adam's Calendar and the Temples of the African Gods. You can find out more by visiting his website at www.slavespecies.com. And also, you should visit there to find out about his world tour, because he may be coming through your city, and we'll talk about that during the show, maybe towards the end. So now, let's welcome Michael live to the show right now. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Excellent, Lance. Nice to be talking to you finally.
Yes. Well, you were out in the archaeological digs the last time we were scheduled. You were doing some very important research for your material.
Yeah, at least I've got a good excuse, you know.
Right. And thank goodness you're a nice guy.
Yeah, and the last time he caught me was about 3 o'clock in the morning.
I was in
Botswana, the capital of Botswana, Gaborone. I'd just driven 1,000 miles from the most northern border of Botswana, which is just south of Angola, and we just arrived there, had a dinner, and I went to bed, and suddenly you phoned, and I realized, oh my goodness, I completely forgot about our interview.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle of nowhere with no telephone and anything like that, and we were out there looking at what African wise men and sangomas and shamans refer to as the serpent worship site at Tsodilo Hills in northern Botswana, which is a fantastic site linked to the origins of humankind. Yeah.
Ah. Well, now, another interesting fact about you is that you live in South Africa, which is said to be the very cradle of civilization, where our species was created, if you want to put it that way, or where the ETs landed originally at the tip of Africa.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Look, one's got to start from the point of departure, that the history of this planet is a lot stranger than most people could possibly ever imagine. And a lot different to what we get taught in our history books and at school and at university. The history of this planet is completely different. And this is really what's coming out very loud and very clear from the physical evidence that we're finding of these vanished ancient civilizations at the southern tip of Africa. And exactly what you said, it looks like we are now really finally uncovering and providing the physical evidence for much of the work done by people like Zachariah Sitchin and others that have written about the Anunnaki and the cloning of the human race and so forth. And that's really exciting. These are very exciting discoveries.
Well, it is exciting because, you know, we've been... there are several ways to look at it. One way is that this information has been suppressed intentionally so that we wouldn't be able to make connections to our ancient heritage. And another way to see that is it simply has been so bizarre that people, and they didn't have records to write about it, although you've been able to find records that talk about this openly. So how can you kind of begin to fill in some of the pieces? I think everybody's pretty much on the same page about the Anunnaki having arrived here. Now, the differences are in timing. Now, in your book, you say it was approximately 443,000 years ago.
Yeah, look, those extrapolations I take from people like Sitchin and others that have either agreed or disagreed with him. But the important thing that we're dealing with now is the act of deciding to create a species that would help the Anunnaki in their main objective to get to Earth, and that was to come and find this substance called gold. And this becomes really important because gold is inextricably linked to human origins and the history of the human race. You cannot separate humanity from its obsession with gold, and not just humans, but the gods. The gods of the humans in every ancient culture and civilization were actually the ones that were obsessed with gold, and the humans just inherited or caught that disease from their gods.
Mm-hmm,
But the evidence we're finding now is this lost, vanished, this extremely vast, vanished civilization that I believe was wiped out by the flood about 12 to 13,000 years ago, this event that all ancient cultures talk about, pretty much exactly the same storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really spectacular because what people don't realize is the immensity, the hugeness and the vastness of this vanished civilization. You know, we're dealing with over 10 million stone structures and stone ruins that have been left behind and just deserted and covered by soil. And now we're starting to rediscover some of these that have been either rebuilt by later arrivals or washed clean by 13,000 years of slow and persistent rain that washed clean many of the ruins that were built on top of the mountaintops, and that's where we started finding the first evidence of these and then extrapolating it down into the valleys and the larger expanse of southern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're dealing with a civilization that is probably between 50 and 100 million people strong.
Wow.
And that lasted there for probably about 270,000 years. And, you know, I mean, you said the origins of humankind. At this stage, mitochondrial Eve studies show us that, or suggest that modern humans, as we like to think about them or call them, appeared on Earth sometime between 200 and 300,000 years ago. Even about 2 weeks ago, Rice University published a paper on exactly this, that their new rehashed, revised mitochondrial studies suggest that modern humans are at least 200,000 years old.
Mm.
So, you know, it's not very far from what we're finding, and this is what becomes really exciting.
Well, one of the things that I just love about your book is that you actually talk about the lineage of these various Anunnaki groups and how they eventually got into some different opinions about what should happen. One of them was a scientist. I don't remember which one that was, whether it was, I think it was Enlil or Enki. You'll have to fill in the blanks because, you know, I'm not the scholar here. And that there was a lot of experimentation with cloning and trying to make some kind of assistant, which numerous attempts and numerous failures occurred over a very long period of time. So this wasn't just, you know, Adam and Eve were created and they started walking around and, you know, having sex with the Anunnaki. It wasn't like that.
No, of course not. And, I mean, the Sumerian tablets make it clear that this attempt at cloning took quite a long period of time, and I believe that many different creatures and species were cloned before they decided and settled on the humans, the Homo sapiens.
Uh-huh.
And that is why we find, I believe, this is my theory and my belief, and we find it in the fossils and the archaeological finds, of these other strange species linked to Homo sapiens all over the world.
Mm.
And we're very confused by this because they don't seem to fit anywhere. And that's really exciting information because it corroborates what the Sumerian tablets tell us. The translations tell us it very clearly. And, you know, some people read the Bible and these and books like that very literally. And, you know, I must warn people against that because the Bible is a very important document. It is filled with incredibly important information about human origins and human history. But you've got to strip away that sort of holier-than-thou attitude and application.
Absolutely.
The moment you look beyond that, you'll be absolutely blown away how rich in information the Bible is in possible way. You know,
Well, you opened that door for me because I my dad was a big Bible thumper, and so I kind of shied away from it and went more towards spirituality. But I've always thought that there are eternal truths in there. But your book shows brings it to life and shows who these people really were and when they lived, and it makes it an exciting living process.
Exactly. You know, Lance, the thing that people need to study the Bible, learn about the Bible and its truths, because, for example, the word Elohim, the original word for God in the Bible is Elohim, and that is not a singular. It is a plural. It means the gods, and many very deeply religious people don't know this, and they will deny it to their death, and unfortunately, this is a problem, because when you read the word God in the Bible, you must immediately translate it into its in its original form, and that is the gods, plural gods, the Elohim. And that's what it was. And suddenly when you read the Bible, you read the Sumerian tablets, you realize that you're reading about the same group of gods as you read in the Sumerian tablets. Now, in the same breath, you've got to then immediately distinguish between God with a big G and God with a small g, or the gods with a small g, because in no way do I ever want to discredit the divine being or the God or the creator of the universe and all things in it, that consciousness or energy source that is responsible for all this stuff that we are part of, that we don't understand, and I refuse to put that into a box.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and I also refuse to attribute human attributes such as anger and jealousy to a God that's so vast that those things just don't have any meaning in those realms. So it makes sense if those are the local gods or the gods that were worshipped as gods because we didn't know any better, and they created us, literally.
Well, exactly. They were our makers, and we were their slaves, always have been. And,
they
were advanced beings that had the knowledge of flight and intergalactic travel and solar system travel and levitation and had advanced knowledge, and we looked at them as gods. Now we reach that same stage, okay, and we're being controlled by a group of advanced beings on this planet right now to try and prevent us from recognizing this information and finding out what's really going on, because this is a very cozy little planet where a lot of wealth, a lot of material and minerals are being obtained.
Oh, yeah.
And Earth started out as a mining colony with humans, and guess what? It is now a larger mining community than ever before in its entire history.
Absolutely. And many of my guests and Dr. Stephen Greer and Richard Hoagland had a discussion about Saturn recently, saying that the rings of Saturn are engineered and that the planets, the moons definitely, and the planet Saturn are all geoengineered devices. They're actually they're made devices.
Yeah.
But what it seems like is happening here on our planet is that our wonderful dear planet is being turned into a Death Star almost.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, if you watch movies like Star Wars, and you said it, it's exactly that. It's like we're portraying and playing out some weird prophecy that's been showed to us in movies over years and years and years, over decades, from Star Trek to Battlestar Galactica, abandoning planet Earth because it's about to be destroyed, and then coming back to it, you know, thousands of years later to recolonize it and stuff like that. It's really interesting stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And
you mentioned, too, that the Anunnaki, when they had their split, I encourage everyone to buy this book because it's really crucial to gaining a grasp of understanding what has happened here and what is happening here. And maybe not all the pieces are there because this is a work in progress, but there's a lot of information there and a lot of good information. And one of the things that you bring up is that over these hundreds of thousands of years, the Anunnaki themselves had created rivalries and split up the earth and fought over territories and so on and so forth. And some of them bred other beings from their, cloned other beings from their own blood, which were merged with reptilian lines and with some other lines that were cold-blooded in order to be fighting machines.
Yeah.
So there, I mean, it's a very complex situation. Now, you mentioned that there are those here today that are controlling the planet. Are those offshoots of the Anunnaki? Are they the Aryans? Or some people talk about reptilians and greys. Is it a conglomeration of renegade ETs that have gotten in with the governments and the black operations?
Well, you know, Lawrence, that's not a simple answer. And I don't know if anybody outside of the actual body that does the controlling knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
So what, on the outside, what we're doing, the guys that are doing the research and picking up the pieces of the puzzle are getting bits of information all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I can tell you is that the world is not run by the presidents of the countries.
No.
Okay? So if you think that Barack Obama is in charge of the United States, you got to wake up and smell the coffee.
Absolutely,
you know?
Right.
And if you think that anybody else is in charge, any president or prime minister is in charge of the country, they are just the puppets that have been put in place to execute the will of the people that are actually in charge.
That's
now,
right.
Who those people or beings are that are in charge, well, that is a very, very difficult question to answer because they don't want us to know. And they are spreading seeds of information and disinformation and causing confusion. And so it goes. What we can tell the people out there is that these are not human beings, and that there is a cross-pollination of extraterrestrials that are controlling this planet with some humans that are doing much of the organizing and the running around and executing their wishes and so forth. They're probably looking at a different number of extraterrestrials that, you know, from the Anunnaki, the Anunnaki remnants to reptilians to some greys that are either naturally evolved greys or cloned greys. They were, and this is all the information that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anyone out there that believes they have the absolute truth and absolute breakdown of this, I think we are a long way from finding this out at this stage.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The lid has been kept on very tight, and all we can do is speculate. However, it's going to get more and more difficult for the lid to stay on as the economy collapses and people stop having a reason to get paid to keep quiet. And as the whistleblowers start coming out, we might see more revelations about the truth of what's going on, including, ironically, we're having the show on 9/11, which is the anniversary of the falling of the Twin Towers and the third tower that was taken down by demolition, supposedly.
Yeah. Well, you know what we just discovered recently is, and this comes back to the discoveries we're making in South Africa, is these ancient civilizations that were set up in South Africa, Southern Africa, to mine gold. They worked very, very harmoniously for probably about 270,000 years until they got wiped out by the flood. Then they restarted civilization all over the world in great earnest, looking for more gold. And then you suddenly see civilization spring up all over the world, which seems to be more prominent after the flood. But what has happened here is that during this process of controlling the people for such a long period of time, the genetic memory of that kind of lifestyle is deeply encoded in our DNA. And I call it a contributionist society. Those people lived without money, without the concept of money, without the concept of barter or trade, without the concept of value attached to anything. They just all lived and supported whatever they needed to do to get the job done of mining gold, and then at a later stage, other minerals as well. And this is a very interesting model to look at, because I believe, first of all, the people out there that believe that money is a consequence of evolution are completely misguided and have been fooled.
Right.
Money has got nothing to do with that. Money was very maliciously and consciously introduced to the human race, introduced as a tool to the kings, who, and incidentally, kingdom was lowered down from heaven to earth, and kings were chosen by the gods to rule the people. Mm-hmm. And then they were introduced with a thing called money, through which they controlled their subjects to pay taxes and work the lands that suddenly belonged to the kings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then suddenly we see, hold on, who decided to make you king, buddy?
God.
And we got the same situation, exactly.
Right.
Who decided in South Africa, for example, the mineral rights belong to a very few companies? One of the wealthiest countries in the world in platinum, gold, and all the minerals you can think of, and those mineral rights belong to a very few people. Well,
yeah.
Who decided that? When did that decision get made?
Yeah.
And when did the people agree to that?
Yes.
So
very
we're
interesting questions.
Well, exactly. And you know, when we the governments and the politicians are appointed by the people to do the best they can for the benefit of the people that they are serving. Well, that is not the case.
No. No, it is
so
not.
So what has happened very clearly is that the politicians have stolen the country from their people. It is in the United States, and it is even more grossly visible in South Africa and other African countries. And people must wake up and realize that the politicians have stolen the countries from their people. They've stolen their rights. They enslave them through games of with capitalism, through rise and fall of markets that are synthetically created.
Mm-hmm.
And people aren't aware of this. They think that this is all natural process of stuff happening. It is not happening naturally. It's being manipulated, and we've got to wake up and smell the coffee.
Absolutely. And the most frightening thing is that people aren't waking up fast enough.
Well, you know what? I don't know about that. I think, well, maybe they're not waking up fast enough, but it is certainly happening exponentially. This is my personal experience. And look, I'm on the tour of the United States now, a 26-stop tour. We're in Austin tomorrow morning between 11 and 2. I'm talking in Austin, then I'm coming your way to California. And I'm finding that there's an incredible response from people that are just desperately looking for new answers and new solutions on all levels, on spiritual levels, on the physical and economical levels, and are just tired of the lies that they've been sold.
Absolutely. Well, we've been handed a line of bull and enslaved all our lives. I mean, when you realize, I just realized, you know, a few years ago that I was born into slavery and that I've been basically living under indentured servitude all my life.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's not a pleasant realization to come to. And those people who are holding down one or two or three jobs, they're certainly not going to be very pleased to know this. But if everybody quit at the same time and stopped using money, that would completely destroy the ability of the controllers to manipulate anyone because we would be taking back our power.
Well, money is a tool that they've created, synthetically created, to keep us enslaved. And they play games with these silly games that they play with the rise and fall of markets and manipulating it every which possible way they can.
Yeah.
And, you know, people look at this and they study the markets, and people that study economics are really smart people, aren't they? And only a handful of people can really understand that stuff. It's all such a bunch of rubbish and lies that, people wake up.
Yeah,
stop believing that stuff.
Yeah.
But you know what, Lance? This is what I find most exciting, and you said the waking up is not necessarily happening fast enough. I think that the discoveries we're making in South Africa and Southern Africa were the ancient civilizations. Not only the fact that there was this vast civilization of people that were there mining gold and other minerals, they vanished mysteriously, but what we're finding, the remains of the structure that they left behind, we're discovering that these structures and that they had a knowledge of advanced technology or an advanced knowledge of the use of technology, and that technology was the use of sound frequency and frequency as a source of energy. And this is becoming a very important key to us rediscovering this source of free energy. Now, I want the people that are listening to the show to pay very important attention to this, because this is really like a completion of some weird prophecy that we've had since the biblical times that talk about frequency and sound being the primordial word of God that created the universe, and the Aum being the primordial creative source. And then now we're discovering the ancient civilizations using sound frequency and other frequencies as a source of energy. Well, in the last 120 so odd years, we've had people like, you know, Royal Raymond Rife and John Keeley and Nikola Tesla, who gave us free energy, who cured all disease, who could levitate things with sound, who could crush rock and separate things with sound and disassociate water. This information has been rediscovered recently. The fact that we've measured these ancient stone structures in South Africa that are still alive and giving us incredible amounts of energy in the form of frequency is a very important discovery.
Wow.
And I believe that the moment you give people free energy, that is by far the largest break in the control of the human race, is the free energy aspect of it.
Oh, absolutely. Many of my guests and quite a few whistleblowers have mentioned that privately held corporations in league with the military and black operations have back-engineered free energy as long as 60 to 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And so they have technology supposedly that's between 1,000 and 5,000 years ahead of anything that we can even imagine. So they're just sitting on it while we have oceans bleeding with oil because, you know, it's the money thing and the power thing.
Well, we need to be controlled. You know, we need to be controlled.
Exactly.
Remember that, to come back to what you said earlier, we're a slave planet full of slaves everything on this planet, the entire industry and infrastructure that we believe is this civilization on Earth is actually there to support the mining activities on this planet.
Yeah.
The mining of the minerals that we're getting out of the ground, and most of those minerals are going off this world. They're going off this planet.
Yes, we're using
a small fraction of it for so-called industry and technology and lifestyle and building and all that. That's just a fraction of it. The rest especially the gold, is going off this planet.
Well, you know, they took the gold standard away in 73, I think, and the gold just kind of vanished.
Yeah.
All of Fort Knox, it was emptied out, and all of the gold reserves, nobody has done an accounting on it, but nobody can account for it because they don't know where any of it is.
Yeah.
So we know that everything is being manipulated, and the money and the power is being literally vacuumed out of the economy. So a little bit of a concern for most of us might be, what happens when us useless eaters run out of money to be bled from?
Yeah.
You know, they've got vaccines to kind of create diseases to wipe us out, but those aren't very fast.
Yeah, no, that's not working either, but for some reason or another.
Well, maybe we have some good guys on our side.
But I believe that our discoveries that are linked now, showing the frequency thing and as a source of energy, and it's spectacular, and hopefully I'm going to see you when I come to California. Hopefully you're going to come to my presentation there.
You're going to be in Sacramento on September 5th, aren't you?
I believe so, yeah.
Well, I will look that up and make an effort to be there and to meet you, because I love your work. I think you're way ahead on the cutting edge, and I think it's really important stuff that you're doing that needs to be supported.
Well, you know, I like to get away from the airy fairy. I mean, it's important to be spiritually connected and understand, you know, the sacred geometry and the higher dimensions and the fourth and fifth dimension and the Kundalini and all that, and these wonderful angelic higher beings and all that. But you know, it's great. But at the same time, you got to bring it back to reality, because right now people are desperate, people are jobless, people are homeless, people live in misery, they're unhappy, they're angry, and you need to be able to pull this together and give the people an answer that they understand and can resonate with, is that you're telling them the truth, that you're not making stuff up, that you're telling them something that they can really embrace and say, I understand this, it resonates with me, and this is something that I can take forward and make sense of it, so that I can realize where we've come from as a species and where we're heading through this manipulation, and what it is I can do about it to change this misery that we live in.
Yeah,
because you know, let's face it, there is no happy or outcome or happy solution to the financial, system or the system that we live in on this planet today. There is no happy outcome, period.
Right.
That's it. So what are we going to do? Do we just carry on? You know, do we just carry on marching forward to the beat of the drum of the Illuminati and the control groups and the slave drivers? Or do we say, okay, well, we need to start pushing in a different direction. We don't want to start conflict or war because that hasn't brought us anywhere. But very slowly and gently start moving in a slightly different direction. And waking up and realizing that if we just gently push this thing, just like a giant ship, if you keep, you know, exerting a little bit of pressure on the one ship, slowly but surely it'll go off course.
Interesting. Now, do you have any ideas about how that could be done as far as maybe forming intentional communities? Or what's your vision for that? I know there's a Venus Project and all kinds of interesting things that are being proposed. What do you have any gut feeling about what might be a positive direction to take for us?
Yeah, I do. I started a consciousness movement, I suppose you can call it, called contributionism. And I really borrowed this from the ancient civilizations, unconscious of it when I did it, and adapted it, looked at all the existing models that we've had. Because if we agree that every single socio-political system we've had as the human race has failed us, which I believe is quite evident and quite obvious.
Yes.
So here we are. We're pretty screwed. Everything has failed us. We've got to put something into place that is completely different, something so different and so radical that we have not tried it yet. We can't go back and try and rehash fascism or rehash communism or rehash capitalism. No. They don't work.
None of them work.
So we got to propose something completely different. And I propose the system that I call contributionism, where you take money out of the equation, which is the tool of enslavement. By taking money out of the equation, you immediately remove the concept of barter or trade.
Right.
That must go as well. Anything that has exchange or attaches value to anything must be completely removed from the system.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you need to explain to people that what it is that people need to start to get involved in is contributing, and I call it contributionism because it's a social structure where everybody contributes what it is that they're passionate about or good at, naturally God-given talents.
Mm-hmm.
They contribute to their community to the best of their ability for the greater benefit of all. Not, well, if I give this to you, what do I get in return? That's the wrong. We've been down this road for too long, and it doesn't work.
It doesn't, no.
So it's a conscious movement that everybody contributes to the greater benefit of all in whatever community or society they live in. And this is a slight departure from some of the movements that I've seen out there on the internet and so forth, where they say we must go back to, you know, living off the land and everybody must grow vegetables and all this. That's also the wrong way to go.
Right.
Because rocket scientists don't want to grow vegetables.
Okay. Right.
Rocket scientists must do rocket science.
Right.
And farmers must farm.
Right.
And
I like
shoemakers
that.
Must design shoes and you know, guys that design free energy must work on free energy, and guys that design green cities must design new green cities, and so it must go. This is how it works.
Yes, yes.
Don't force people to grow vegetables, because not everybody is good at that. You know?
Right, right. Yes, I've tried my hand a few times, and, you know, it's not always a winning proposition.
No. And yet there are some people that do it so comfortably and so easily.
Well, yes, of course, of course. And there may have been a time when our grandparents were farmers and they were adept at farming and milking cattle and things like that. But those days are over.
Yeah.
They cannot be gone back to, except maybe in small circles of people who enjoy that and love the ranch and love the cattle. And allow them to walk freely and don't injure them or cause them pain or give them chemicals like Monsanto's RBGH or whatever
that's
it is.
That's a whole nother you know, can of worms you're opening there. The control of food on this planet. I mean, it is just absolutely, it's absurd. And most people are completely oblivious and unaware of the attack and the control of food supply on this planet.
Oh, absolutely. And the genetically modified food and the nanobacteria that they're using on meats and things, I mean, it goes beyond anything we can even conceive of. It's a train wreck headed for a brick wall.
Right. Now, just to come back to the question you asked, what do we do? So I propose this concept called contributionism. But you can't just start it by a little, somewhere hidden in the mountains, little communities that are self-sufficient and that, because you're not going back to Stone Age. You're not going back to living in caves. You're not going back to the Dark Ages. We're moving forward with technology beyond belief. What contributionism brings to the table is an absolute explosion in abundance in every possible field that you can imagine, from science and technology, rocket science, to free energy, to the production of foods, to the growth of communities, to the control and the happiness and the growth and explosion of arts and culture. Every level of societal structure just explodes in abundance. Now, this sounds a bit utopian to people that have never contemplated this or don't really know what I'm talking about. But believe me, after 5 years of research into this, the more I study it, the more I work on it, the more abundant and obvious it is. It is spectacular.
Well, Michael, I agree with you totally on that, and I've been for those ideas for some time, in one form or another, especially eliminating money and the barter system. However, is there a problem that on the horizon in the fact that the controllers have they have acquired a great deal of power, and they control the military, they control the three-letter alphabet soup agencies, all of the weapons, and so on and so forth? Isn't there some kind of point at which those two systems have to be diverged or divested from? We can't be controlled and run by an elite that wants to use us for slave labor and for energy and be free at the same time. They're incompatible.
Of course. And this is where I see an interesting opportunity. Use the tools that they've set up for their own control, called democracy and capitalism, to beat them at their own game. Okay, so it becomes very interesting. The contributionism is not something you can just walk into overnight. It's going to take a few transitionary steps. And that's unfortunately what it is, because that's the mess that we're in. Unless by some absolute stroke of luck, or fortune or whatever, misfortune if you want to call it that, we have a complete meltdown of the satellite system and communication system, and by some giant solar flare that comes in 2012 as a result of the galactic, frequencies lining up, or the energy sources.
Yeah.
All this is quite possible, and some people predict that it may happen.
And so, that would be a great leveling tool, because nobody would have any money at that point.
Exactly. So if there's a global meltdown and every computer and anything that works on electronics just gets fried, you can't communicate with anybody, you can't drive any car with an electrical system, you're basically back to square one. And now, this is when this ancient knowledge of the use of frequency as an energy source kicks in.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I see.
So suddenly...
You
see where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah. And many say that the pyramids were moved with sound technology.
Exactly. It is all, Lance, this is the amazing thing. Once I realized that the ancient structures of Southern Africa were built with the knowledge of sound frequency and using sound and frequency as a tool, as a source of energy, suddenly everything makes absolute sense. Stonehenge makes sense. Great pyramids start to make sense. All the other ancient civilizations, all the other structures around the world start to make sense. They were all linked to the generation of energy using frequency, and specifically sound frequency, as a source of energy. And this is why I believe that we're reaching the strange conclusion of some weird prophecy that I said earlier. Because if we have a meltdown and we go back to, we've got to start all over, and there's no money to control the people, and if the Illuminati think they're going to control the people because they've got gold, they're completely misguided, and this is where they've completely lost the plot and missed the boat.
Yeah,
because gold is going to mean absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
unless
you can't eat a Mona Lisa or a bar of gold.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Food,
yeah.
A plate of food is going to be a lot more worth a lot more than any kind of gold. Unless you can convert the gold to monatomic elements and start using it as an energy source. That's
now,
something that, else again.
That brings up an interesting question that I would like to ask you about. What about the idea that gold has been used, like the Philosopher's Stone, by the Anunnaki to create basically eternal life? And you bring up the idea in the book that we were originally created from their genes, and we would have lived as long a life as they would have, but they snipped some of the DNA, and which gave us disease and shorter lives. And so our natural state could be to live for hundreds, if not thousands of years, disease-free and eternally young.
Yeah, well, that's exactly that. I think they use the...
and the gold, the orme, or the ormus, or... mana.
Yeah, exactly.
Mana.
All of that, and it's all linked. And when you start studying it in the Bible and other ancient texts and what we're finding in South Africa now, it's all linked. It's all linked to the understanding and the knowledge of monatomic gold and monatomic elements in the platinum group metals as well, and using that as an energy source and for all kinds of other things. But that is another interesting, very interesting, and I suppose a very important aspect of this. Of this debate, but at this stage, we don't really know,
right.
other than the really secret laboratories of the
right.
Black Ops,
right.
how to
right.
convert gold to monatomic gold or other elements into gold.
Right.
What we do know is that gold was a highly sought after element and cannot be separated from humanity. It's just not possible. The origins
right.
of humankind are inextricably linked to the pursuit of gold.
Right. Now, what about the idea that I know a lot of people are concerned about this one, so I feel like I should probably ask you. I have some kind of need to ask you. The idea that the Anunnaki were really housed in Nibiru and that they cycle around here somewhere around every 3,600 years and that they're about due for another return. Well, one thing, where did the Anunnaki go? Did they go underground? Are some of them still here, do you think? Are they on some of the other planets? Are they overlooking us? Have they changed their attitude towards us over the thousands of years watching us evolve? Or what's your gut feeling about that?
I think all of the above, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all of the above. But I think the most important one is that they've evolved themselves to higher consciousness levels. And realize that what they did here is not necessarily so cool, and
right.
trying to make up for some of the mess that they caused,
yeah,
and fix some of the mess that they've caused, and lining and working together with other extraterrestrials and other advanced beings or higher conscious beings out there to try and restore the planet to a stable planet, not being gutted and mined and completely. Ripping out the guts of this planet, because remember that the gold and the platinum group metals, especially that is in this inside planet Earth, that is actually that's like its heart, it's its energy source, it's the thing that keeps the planet healthy and balanced.
Wow.
And this is not just something that I'm saying because I feel this. I know this from research that I've done and the work that I'm doing with the brilliant Willem de Swartz in Johannesburg, who has pretty much decoded all this stuff with his numeric science and shows how all these things fit together. You know, the fact that, you know, the atomic number is of gold is 79, and the polar axis diameter of Earth is 7,900 miles. This is not accidental. These numbers are all inextricably linked. When you start working with these numbers, you realize that we're working with floating point. When 79 and 7,900 is all the same, or 7.9, it's all the same meaning. The numbers have the same meaning. And gold plays a very important part in keeping this planet in its equilibrium and keeping it healthy. And that's being ripped out of its Earth and taken off this planet. That causes dis-ease in this planet.
Yes.
And it's not a good thing.
Well, that and the destruction of the rainforests and the poverty and the disease and the mining and the list is so long now that you could, we could talk about that for an hour and not be done with it.
And remember that all of that happens for one reason only, for money.
Money. Aren't civilizations being created so that the power elite and the ETs would have the technology to come and go with ships as they please?
Well, exactly. But you see, now and then you get into the more metaphysical part of this debate. As long as beings are physical, they are part of this what we believe to be the holographic or imaginary universe. And now we get into the really weird kind of debate where quantum physics, you enter the realm of quantum physics and the metaphysics, where quantum physicists are now suddenly telling us, hold on, but the nature of reality is not what we think it was, and none of this stuff is actually there, and it only exists because our consciousness allows it to exist, and we manifest all these things with our minds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And people just, this is way beyond people's comprehension right now, and yet this is what happens in the this debates among quantum physicists and people that are prepared to go to those debates.
Right.
The guys on the street aren't going to look at this and go, these guys have taken some weird drugs and they don't know what they're talking about. But that,
right,
in my opinion, I believe, is actually where this whole thing is going, and very excited about this, because quantum physics, to me, seems to be like a gift from the divine being or the divine creator of the universe. It's like a gift given to us to allow us to find our way back to that source of unity from which we have separated, or we think we've separated, and created this duality and hierarchy in a imaginary reality that we believe to be real, but is actually not there. And the moment you realize that it's not real is probably when you start the journey very quickly to high levels of consciousness and realizing that we are going to make our way back to source and back to what we would refer to as unity, or the divine being point of departure. I'm possibly using the wrong terminology here, but it's unity is the ultimate goal, because without unity, nothing can exist.
Right.
And sometimes people get very confused by that. They say, well, unity, we all got to be the same, or wear the same clothes, do the same stuff. It's very boring.
No.
Unity is the only way that you can have diversity is through unity. And unity basically means infinite diversity.
Mm-hmm,
And a very simple example of that would be like looking at your own body. Every cell in your body, you've got trillions of cells that make up your human body. Every one of those cells starts out as exactly the same little cell with the same little genetic DNA strand in it, right? And then they diversify into these trillions of different cells, all working in harmony to create your human body. So from unity comes infinite diversity, but it has to work in harmony, otherwise it cannot exist.
Yes. And
so,
we have broken away from the harmonics, which might relate to what you're talking about with sound. Maybe we
exactly.
Maybe we're being beamed with harp technology that is you know what I'm saying, the discordant.
Yeah.
And because the harmonics are being interfered with of higher frequencies, we're trapped inside the illusion of being separated and in duality.
Yeah. Now, I've got to come back to, because you brought it up, the whole harmonics. The harmony is a vibration. Everything is linked through sound frequency. I mean, we use these words in our language every day, all the time. You know, I have a bad vibe with this guy, bad vibrations with this guy.
Yeah.
There's a harmonious feeling in the room. Well, these are all references to sound and sound frequency. And to explain to people how, very basically, how things are all connected. Everything in the universe is connected and harmonizes and vibrates together. Everything is connected. You cannot separate anything from anything, because it's all frequency and all linked. that vibrates together. And to explain that very quickly is that the number seven is important because there are seven whole notes in a harmonic resonant octave. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And the eighth note is like the boundary of the end, the edge of the one octave and the beginning of the next one. It's the common boundary between the two resonating octaves and frequencies. So that shows you how everything is linked together. Everything vibrates and is connected to each other. You cannot separate anything from anything else.
And that works in the quantum field too, which you were just saying is quantum entanglement.
Exactly. And you know, what we get taught in excuse me, in physics is the whole thing that, you know, and this is the beginning of quantum physics, is the whole double slit experiment. Well, they say, well, that matter can exist as a particle and as a wave.
Uh-huh.
And that's just the biggest bull that anyone can teach students at school. It's
uh-huh.
not true. Don't teach them that. Say, you got to teach them what it is that we observe. We observe that a particle, in a physical world, when you shoot a particle or a photon, and it's been done with molecules, subatomic particles, and atoms, and a molecule, I believe a buckyball is the biggest molecule that this has ever been done with. I speak under correction here. This has been done with, might have been done with bigger things, but what it shows us is that matter can exist in a physical form, in the three-dimensional space that we see around us. We live in a 3D world, and 3D time. We live in space-time. 3D space and 1D time. Time is linear. We can't go back and forward in time, but we move up and down in all directions in space, right? So particles and matter in our reality can exist in this particle form. And then when you shoot it at these double slits in these experiments, the two slits, it comes out the other side, and this is what they call it, a wave. It exists as a wave. Well, it's the wrong expression. You confuse people when you say that. What happens on the other side is that particle exists in past, present, and future at the same time. It exists in all places at the same time. It exists in more than one place. In fact, it exists in as many places as you can imagine at the same time. So what that particle, in essence, has done, it's crossed the line between space-time and time-space.
Oh.
Okay.
Wow.
Interesting. Now, yeah,
keep going now.
Yeah, now you see, this stuff gets really exciting because this is what quantum physics is all about. So when I said quantum physics has been given to us as a gift from God or the divine being or the Holy Spirit to find our way back to source, because we come from that 3D time where time, past, present, and future coexist, the realm of the divine. Okay.
Where it is all simultaneous.
Yes,
right.
Where all things are possible.
Right.
And we've been projected into this three-dimensional holographic universe, which we think is real, but it's actually not. It's just a projection of some weird imagination that we think it's real. And once we find our way back across, it gets a little bit more fuzzy, because I believe there's another boundary that needs to be crossed from 3D time into the realm of the divine. 3D time does not necessarily mean the realm of the divine, but I think we're on our way back to source, back to the divine creator, which is just in some weird way another boundary away. And you know what's interesting about this, Lance, is that Einstein actually had this. I mean, in his formula, EMC squared, he showed us this, but he didn't explain it in that way. And the scientists and the physicists and the media didn't explain it because they didn't probably understand it. And they kept harping on EMC squared and blah, blah, blah.
And
they didn't realize what it is that he actually was trying to tell us. He was trying to tell us exactly that. If you take the equal sign and you put it upright, you've got the double slits of the double slits experiment. On the one side, you've got E, which is energy, which is frequency. We now know this. And you take the energy, which is frequency, and you put it through the double slit. On the other side, you have M. Forget about light. It's actually got nothing to do with it. So E equals M. Energy equals mass. Okay, and you put it through the double slit, like the double slit experiment in quantum physics, you suddenly realize that energy can create matter, and matter can dissolve into energy, and the matter suddenly exists in 3D time, past, present, and future, in all places. And this is what Einstein's theory actually tells us, very, very graphically, in our face.
Wow, amazing. Well, it's obvious that you have a brilliant mind. And unfortunately, we're coming closer to the end of the show, and I wanted to give you a moment to, you know, wrap up, you know, any thoughts that you'd like to share with the listeners for tonight, anything that you, any startling revelations that you've found recently, or anything hopeful that you feel you could impart to us, and then also mention your website and where you're going to be.
Okay. Thanks very much, Lance. Appreciate this. And wonderful chatting to you. It was a really lovely, invigorating chat that I had with you. I love it.
Oh, wonderful.
Right. So my tour of the United States, if you want to just get the information about it, go to my website, which is slavespecies.com, slavespecies.com. And my whole itinerary is there. Check it out, and if you're in one of the cities, come and see me, and I'll show you a lot more about these discoveries. What I'm talking about is really the discoveries of ancient lost vanished civilizations at the southern tip of Africa. We believe these are the prototype civilizations of the human race from which all other civilizations then later emerged. They had an advanced knowledge of technology. They used sound and frequency as a source of energy for everything they did. And we're rediscovering this. We've measured this energy in these stone circles that we found, so we're not making this up or just imagining that this was. And I will show you what we've measured, and I believe that we are now going to start learning from these ancient cultures how to apply and use this frequency as an energy source, not just in sound, but just basic frequency itself as a source of energy. And see us into the new age, after 2012. Hopefully, maybe this has something to do with it. Maybe these are discoveries that will guide us into the new age beyond 2012 and beyond the enslavement of the petroleum companies and live as free citizens on this planet and protect it.
It will be the first time we've ever been free.
Yeah.
That I know of, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and I want you to come back anytime and share your findings with us. We could have talked for several hours. There were so many questions that I had, and obviously we could go on for quite a long time. And I encourage everybody to get The Slave Species of God. It is a remarkable book. And then I'm going to get Temples of the African Gods, which is the book you just came out with. Is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, in this book, we really just start showing the tip of the iceberg of our discoveries of these ancient cultures and the technology that they had. But there'll be a new book coming out very soon in the next year that'll go into a lot more detail.
Wonderful. Well, you can count me on getting every one of your books coming out. So I thank you so much for being on the show. I love talking to you, and I'm so glad we made this 9/11 chat.
Thanks so much, Lance. Lovely chatting, and take care.
And maybe I'll see you on October 5th in Sacramento.
Fantastic. I look forward to seeing you there.
All right. Thanks a lot, and good night, everybody, and thanks for listening. Bye-bye.